Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Gregory Stockel and Brian Lynn. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, Ashley tells us about recent military operations in China.
The Chinese military said on Wednesday it had recently carried out a combat readiness patrol in the seas and airspace around Taiwan. In a statement, the People's Liberation Army Eastern Theater Command said the patrol was a necessary action against U.S.-Taiwan collusion. The command said the United States often made moves to support Taiwan independence forces, which will push Taiwan into a dangerous situation. China claims self-governing Taiwan as its own territory. Over the past few years, mainland forces have increased their military activities around the island to pressure Taiwan to accept its sovereignty claims. China has been especially unhappy with U.S. support for Taiwan. Last week, U.S. President Joe Biden held a news conference in Tokyo with Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. Biden said yes when a reporter asked if he was willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if China invaded. The comment angered China, as the American president appeared to signal a change in U.S. policy toward Taiwan. The policy, under the 1979 Taiwan Relations Act, does not require the U.S. to intervene militarily to defend Taiwan if China invades. But the treaty says American policy is to make sure Taiwan has the resources to defend itself. On Wednesday, the Chinese military command restated that Taiwan is part of China. It said Chinese troops continue to strengthen military training and preparations to thwart interference from outside forces and actions by those who support Taiwan independence. To thwart means to prevent something from happening. The statement did not say when the patrol happened, but Taiwan reported on Monday that 30 Chinese military aircrafts entered its air defense zone. That was the largest number of aircrafts to reach the zone since January. Taiwan's Air Force warned the planes away. No shots were fired. However, Taiwan's missile systems were deployed to follow the activities. On Tuesday, Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen met with U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth in Taipei. Tsai said after the meeting that the U.S. is planning on cooperation between its National Guard and Taiwan's military. She did not provide any details. Also on Tuesday, the U.S. announced it was planning the world's largest naval exercises in the Pacific Ocean. The exercises, or war games, will include 38 surface ships, 4 submarines, 170 aircrafts, and 25,000 personnel from 26 countries. The exercises will run from June 29th to August 4th. Among those taking part are members of the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, India, Japan, and Australia. The games also include the Philippines, Malaysia, and Brunei, which have competing claims against China in the South China Sea.
Medical experts say the most dominant form of COVID-19 currently spreading in the United States appears to spread faster than earlier variants or versions. In addition, it might be better at escaping immunity and could cause more serious disease. Scientists say the subvariant now spreading is a mutation genetically linked to both the Omicron and Delta versions of COVID-19. Both of those versions were dominant in the U.S. in the past. The new virus form has a genetic quality that comes from the pandemic's past. It is known as a Delta mutation. Dr. Wesley Long is an infectious disease expert at Houston Methodist in Texas. He said it appears to permit the virus to escape pre-existing immunity from vaccination and prior infection, especially if you were infected in the Omicron wave. The mutation is believed to be able to better escape immunity because the past Omicron variant did not have it. The current variant spreading in the U.S., known as BA2.12.1, was responsible for about 58% of U.S. COVID-19 infections 1 week ago. There are other kinds of Omicron viruses that have the mutation. Two in South Africa, known as BA4 and BA5, have the same genetic mutation as Delta. And BA2.12.1 has one that is nearly the same. This genetic change may trouble people who caught the first Omicron version and thought it made them unlikely to get COVID-19 again soon. Most people do not know for sure which kind of coronavirus caused their illness. But the first Omicron version caused a huge wave of cases late last year and early this year. Long said laboratory data suggests that an earlier infection with the first Omicron is not very protective against reinfection with the new mutations. However, one study by researchers at Ohio State University found those who had Delta may have some immunity against the new viruses. Dr. Shan Lu Liu co-wrote the study. He said the amount of protection a Delta infection provides depends partly on how long ago someone was sick. That is because immunity decreases over time. Long advises that people who got sick with Delta should not think of themselves as completely protected against the new subvariants, especially if they are not vaccinated. He said, "I wouldn't say anyone is safe." Liu said booster shots can provide strong protection against the new kinds of COVID-19. In general, vaccines and past infection can protect people from the worst outcomes of COVID-19. But Liu added that early data point toward more serious disease with the new mutants. Scientists say it is too early to know if the versions will lead to a higher rate of hospitalizations and deaths. Though home testing makes it difficult to follow all U.S. COVID cases, data from Johns Hopkins University showed they are averaging nearly 107,000 a day. That is up from 87,000 2 weeks ago. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that the number of people entering the hospital with COVID-19 has been increasing since around mid-April. Long said, "I'm hopeful that we don't see a similar increase in hospitalizations that we've had in prior waves." He added, "But with COVID, anytime you have lots of people being infected, it's just a numbers game. Some of those people are going to be severe. Some of those people are going to need hospitalization. Some of them, unfortunately, are going to pass away." I'm Gregory Stockel.
A new report suggests many online education systems gathered private information on children as they studied at home during the COVID-19 pandemic. The report was released by the international rights group Human Rights Watch. The organization says it examined 164 education technology or EdTech products used in 49 countries. Of the 164 EdTech systems studied, HRW said 89% appeared to be involved in activities that risked or infringed on children's rights. Such products had the ability to follow children's online activities, in most cases secretly and without the consent of children or their parents, HRW's report found. Data collected included the identities of children and their families and where they performed their schoolwork. Other information collected included who their friends were and what technology devices they used. HRW said most of the online learning products it examined either sent or provided access to advertising technology companies. In doing so, some EdTech products targeted children with behavioral advertising, the report said. This kind of advertising can target individuals with personalized content and advertisements that follow them across the internet. HRW said that with the exception of Morocco, all governments studied in the report endorsed at least one EdTech product that risked or undermined children's rights. The group said its investigators began examining the educational products in 2021. At that time, school children across the world were using EdTech products at home because pandemic-related restrictions prevented in-classroom learning. The report states that data gathering took place in virtual classrooms and educational settings where children could not reasonably object to the collection methods. The report noted that it was not possible for HRW to reach a definitive judgment about the company's aims in the data collection effort. The investigators said their reporting was based only on what it observed in the data and the company's and government's own statements. Human Rights Watch said it shared its findings with EdTech companies, advertising companies, and governments covered in the report. It said several technology companies denied collecting data from children, while others said their products were not designed for children's use. Some advertising businesses denied knowledge that data on children was being sent to them. Some EdTech companies also questioned HRW's research methods. ST Math is an American-based online learning system. It said in an explanation of its privacy policies that HRW examined the wrong website for its report. ST Math said its main website that HRW looked at is designed for marketing purposes. It noted that investigators should have examined its other web-based system, which is designed for students and teachers. The company said that system does not have tools to collect data and follow user activity. Reporters from major media organizations in 16 countries assisted in the investigation. In its reporting, The Washington Post said some user data from online learners was shared with major advertising-based companies, including Facebook and Google. A Google spokesperson told The Post the company is investigating the report's claims. The company said it is prepared to take action if it finds any of Google's data privacy rules were violated. A spokesman for Facebook's parent company, Meta, told the newspaper it restricts how businesses share children's data and also limits how advertisers can target children and teens. HRW's report calls on governments to pass and enforce modern child data protection laws that provide safeguards around the collection, processing, and use of children's data. It also urges companies to stop these collection methods. Albert Fox Kahn directs the New York-based Surveillance Technology Oversight Project. He reacted to the report on Twitter. "We already knew technologies were being abused and putting kids at risk," he tweeted. "But this report is important because it shows the scale of harm and how the same mistake is being made by educators and governments around the world." I'm Brian Lynn.
Today, we are visiting a vast and remote park in the state of Alaska. The park is bigger than the country of Switzerland. It is 6 times the size of Yellowstone. In fact, it is the largest national park in America. Its name is Wrangell St. Elias. Do not worry if you have not heard of America's biggest national park. Most Americans do not know its name. But Wrangell St. Elias contains some of North America's largest glaciers and volcanoes. It is also home to 9 of the highest mountains in America. The park extends more than 5.3 million hectares. 4 mountain ranges come together here, including the Wrangell Mountains and the St. Elias Mountains. The Wrangell Mountains cover much of the park. They were formed over the last 5 million years from volcanic activity. The St. Elias Mountains stretch into Canada's Yukon Territory. The Chugach Mountains cover the southern part of the park. The Alaskan Mountain Range forms some of the huge park's northern boundary. The mountain landscape is wild. Much of it is also difficult to reach. Private companies offer flight-seeing tours on planes and helicopters. From high above, visitors witness Wrangell St. Elias's beauty.
Rivers and glaciers help tell the story of Wrangell St. Elias National Park. These rivers, with names like Copper, Chitina, Chisana, and Chittistone, come from the park's many glaciers. They wind through land carved out by other huge glaciers long ago. The Copper, the largest river of them all, flows into the Gulf of Alaska. Other rivers take a more dramatic path. The Chittistone River becomes Chittistone Falls, a 91-meter tall waterfall that drops over a steep wall. Glaciers cover almost 13,000 square kilometers of the park. In the summer months, the park's rivers carry their meltwater. It is filled with tiny pieces of sand, stone, and other materials. A buildup of this sediment forces the rivers to flow through new channels. This causes the river beds to twist and turn. From up above, these rivers can look like braided hair. One of the park's most striking places is the Hubbard Glacier. It is the longest tidewater glacier in North America. A tidewater glacier is one that begins in a mountain valley and flows all the way to a body of water. The Hubbard Glacier is 120 kilometers long and nearly 10 kilometers wide. It begins on the 6,000-meter-tall Mount Logan in Canada's Yukon Territory. It ends in the waters of a place called Disenchantment Bay. Hubbard was named in 1890 after Gardner Hubbard, the first president of the National Geographic Society. The massive glacier is only getting bigger. Unlike most glaciers, Hubbard is thickening and extending. Other glaciers face melting caused by increasing temperatures. But experts say Hubbard reacts in an opposite way to climate change. As the Earth's temperature rises, the area around Wrangell St. Elias gets more snow and rain. Scientists say this snow and rain is what permits the glacier to grow. Sometimes very fast growth causes huge pieces of ice to break apart from the glacier. Scientists call this calving. The ice creates a thunderous sound as it breaks and falls into the water. Hubbard Glacier's size, beauty, and calving activity have made it popular with park visitors. Large boats travel through Disenchantment Bay, taking passengers close to the glacier.
Wrangell St. Elias's system of glaciers and rivers help support animal life in the park. The park's Dall sheep may be the most famous animal residents. Alaska's Dall sheep are the world's northernmost wild sheep population. About 13,000 Dall sheep live within the park's borders. Visitors can look for their white bodies and huge brown horns near rocky mountainsides. Visitors might also see black bears, brown bears, moose, and caribou. Caribou are large North American reindeer with huge, wide antlers. Along the coast, seals and sea lions lie on the ice and splash in the water. Wrangell St. Elias became a national park in 1980. The park's main visitor center is about 300 kilometers east of Anchorage. The long drive to get to the park is an adventure itself. The trip includes roadside views of mountains, glaciers, waterfalls, and lakes. Its distant location makes it one of America's least visited national parks. About 75,000 people visit Wrangell St. Elias each year. By comparison, parks like Yosemite and Yellowstone get about 3 million visitors each year. Visitors can experience the park's pristine nature as well as its historical areas. The Athabascan people lived in the area thousands of years ago. The park includes sites of their villages and hunting areas. The park also has many historical structures and buildings. The National Park Service says the structures represent periods of exploration, mining, and transportation.
One historical place is called Kennicott Milltown. The picturesque town tells a story of westward expansion and discovery. Miners processed nearly $200 million worth of copper at Kennicott Mines between 1911 and 1938. Many of the buildings that remain in the town have been empty for 60 years. Some are in disrepair. The National Park Service works with the local community to restore and preserve them. Some visitors stay at Kennicott during their trip to Wrangell St. Elias. The family-owned Kennicott Glacier Lodge provides beautiful views of the surrounding glacial mountains. It also gives visitors a chance to try exciting outdoor activities like glacier hiking or ice climbing. Some visitors choose to sleep in the wild outdoors. Private campsites are located in many areas of the park. Some visitors set out on long hikes in the park's backcountry area. Whatever way you visit, the immense and untouched beauty of Wrangell St. Elias National Park is guaranteed to awe. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.